them, and please don't put us on hold because then we'll get your music. Thank you.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
I should have just invited you to my house. You could have breakfast. It would have been a lot easier for me, anyway. Well, welcome, everybody. And we have 10 schools on the agenda today, so I know that some of you are a little bit later. Everyone has a copy of the agenda, but we will try to move things along. And Terry, do you want to introduce everyone who is here for staff and also Mr. Lukey on the phone?
Yes, if we could, we'll just introduce ourselves and for the record, because as a reminder, our minutes are the official recording of the their audio recorded. They go up within 24 hours of the meeting or so. I'm Terry Stanfill, Executive Director.
Rachel Kearse, Administrative Assistant.
Kevin Lamont, staff.
And Dick, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, Dr. Lamont. This is Dick Lukey.
Okay. Great. And my name is Paul Mitten. Great. So first up, we have Dynamic Worldwide Training. And we have Dr. Carl Faulkner and Mary Pendleton. Come on up. Go to school. Yeah, I'm going to ask Ms. Stanfill to briefly introduce and bring us up to speed. And just for more information than you probably need, the way that I do this is that I start at the first one and go to the last one to prepare. And so by the time I get to the 10th school, I need to be refreshed on the first school so that I can remember what all of these little post-it notes meant and what was I thinking
well,
at the time. So Terry, take it away.
Dynamic Worldwide Training Consultants is seeking renewal of the 2017 Regular Vocational Program License. During the review of the financial statement, staff had concerns regarding the 2 years of losses and accordingly is referring the renewal to the Finance Committee. Dynamic is owned by D.L. Warren Enterprises and has been licensed by the board since 2010. In the past, the institution has not been on quarterly reporting, and we have not had any complaints. In addition to the fiscal year financial statements and the July 31st financial statements, they provided two-year projections and its plan to improve. And I just wanted to verify with both of you, Dr. Mittman and Mr. Lukey, you got my email yesterday that I noticed my bond calculation was incorrect and that it should be revised down to 32,034, and they currently have a $32,000 bond now.
Dr. Faulkner and Ms. Pendleton, do you want to introduce yourselves and do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
Okay, I'm Mary Pendleton. I've been with the company for 11 years, and I'm the VP of Continuing Education, so that's the portion of what is concerned here, and that's about it.
I'm Dr. Carl Faulkner. I am the Chief Operating Officer and Director of Training at Dynamic Worldwide. I started that position in December, although I'd been here 2 years prior as an instructor and as director of special projects, working on curriculum improvements and so forth for both corporate vendors and for our in-house programs as well. So, thank you.
Okay. And is there anything you'd like to share since we last met? Any updates?
We have made since I took this position in December some significant changes in the way we've done business. I have imposed a project management mindset within the company to ensure that all of our processes are running as efficiently as possible, and that we're not using either capital in terms of resources or capital in terms of human resources in parallel doing the same thing. That has served us well. We have also had a program of cross-training and upgrading instructors so that we have significantly more flexibility in our course offerings and the ability to serve our clients when they have a need for their courses. We have done a lot of in-house development of courses based on current situations and current technologies that are out there, because typically a technology hits the streets about 18 to 24 months before the training programs to show people how to use it hits the streets as well. So we are keeping ourselves more relevant, more current, and forward-thinking, which has been a recurring statement in the positive by our students. We have reduced our number of employees because of the efficiencies that we have had as a result of automation as well as the cross-training. We've had three of them that have retired. We've had a few through attrition that have moved on. And we have readjusted our sales group paradigm to a base plus commission versus a salary base, which has been a positive motivator for increased sales on the part of our sales team. We've reduced overhead significantly. We closed our Raleigh office because it was not deemed to be fiscally feasible based on the amount of throughput from that office. In January, the accelerated payoff of the lease will be completed, which will free up $13,000 a month in current expenditures. We have gone, like some of our vendors started to a standard paradigm of e-books versus print books, which has reduced our printing costs significantly in providing materials to people. In our consumer program, however, we still do provide printed materials because of the type of students that we have and the realization they may not have technology available to them at home to be able to use the electronic materials. We have gone with a new remote learning system that's a cloud-based high-definition system, which has cut maintenance man hours and costs on our prior system that we had in 2009. We have a better scheduling paradigm based on analysis of periodicity of courses as opposed to level of attendance in each of the classes when they were offered, to ensure that we are, for instance, offering a course less frequently to have 8 to 10 people in the course rather than too frequently and having 2 to 3 people using that same level of resources, which has increased the ability of us to be flexible, offer more courses, and to increase the space between cost to give a course and revenues received for such a course. Okay, so we are the only vendor, the only real ILT, or the only instructor-led training for one of the vendors now in the country, the only premier training center for another vendor, and we've been on another vendor, the number one training company, for 13 years. And we still firmly not only hold those positions, but are cadre of people coming to us has actually increased.
And we see a trend, you know, changing in technology. There's always a change there. And so, you know, it took us, you know, really a year to 2 years to really be able to make those changes stick with our vendors and how we actually deliver classes. So I do feel that we're on the upward swing with that, because the changes, and as some of the equipment just got delivered yesterday, which isn't in the notes, that will improve delivery and will improve the speed of the technology. And so I really think that as people understand we have that, it will improve the attendance.
Our bottom line is that we are working constantly to improve the student experience. And once they leave our class, that's not the end of it. In fact, I've had people from courses I taught this summer that have reached out to me with questions, which we're happy to answer. We have service after the sale, so to speak.
Great. Well, you have a high retention rate and a very high placement rate. So congratulations on that. So a couple of questions, and I'm not sure if it was on your end or somehow it got lost in translation. I didn't see either in your 2016 financial statements, I didn't see a cash flow statement. And one of the concerns that I have is that given your current ratio and decrease in current assets in 2016 and also in 2017, I was wondering, you know, whether that was... So we didn't receive that. Do we require that or no? Okay.
I can speak to that.
Well, you know what, why don't you hold on for a sec, and then on the 2017 income statement, so your 6 months or 7 months through July 2017, I have two pages of your P&L, but it doesn't get down to the actual net increase in assets, so I'm missing another page, so it's got your... income, it's got, it looks like some of your expenses, but I don't see.
I do have for you, that I got this morning.
You can just tell us where you're at.
CFO copies that you can put into your materials that are updated
through
the end of August.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do me a favor,
okay?
To put this in like a bad mood when we don't get complete materials. Because, like, reading. It's kind of like if you are reading a book and you get to the last chapter, but there's no last.
Are you talking about the balance sheet, the second page of the balance sheet for 2016?
No, the income statement or the profit and loss dated
July. This one? July 2017?
Yeah.
It stops at rent.
Right. So
that could be a copy here too. So
okay.
Yeah, I do have in the copies I made for you. I mean, I do have another page. I mean, I made a copy of everything.
The one that I just
so we have rent
submitted here actually does come all the way down to net income for the P&L for January through August of this year.
Okay.
As well as the balance sheet going all the way down to liabilities and equity up through August of this year.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you. Just make sure that you have that submitted together with us. Mr. Lukey, do you want to start off or do you want me to continue?
Well, one of the questions, Paul, that I have for Dr. Polk, if he could speak to what he feels the projections will be for the year end of financial statement.
Yeah, so did we able to hear Mr. Lukey?
Yes,
the projections
was, yes,
for the year end. And what you're not seeing, Mr. Lukey, is a January through August net income of an increase of $71,000 in net income. So that's where they were at as of the end of August. Dr. Parkman.
Okay, so what you're asking for is a projection for our position at the end of the year. We have, as of the end of August, we have hit a state of positive cash flow where we are doing things on a cash basis. With vendors and so forth, we're not having to incur any pulling from accounts to pay it and then pay it back, kind of a debit. We look to be at the end of the year. I'm looking for what my CFO provided me here, but we are going to be in the black this year. In spite of the fact that we've had virtually a year of Maricopa County WIOA grant being shut off. So we have made accommodations for that. So right now we're looking to be somewhere in the neighborhood of, for net income, we're going to be positive at the end of the year rather than a $9,300 shortfall. We're looking somewhere around $100K to a little over in the black this year.
And that's encouraging.
That is current as of the data analysis I have through the end of August. And we do have increasing, increasing revenues projected and actually registered and paid for into what is typically the slow period in the back half of November and early December. We are ahead of last year and the year before's numbers. One of the things we have also done is the week of Christmas, 25 through 29, we're actually shutting the company down because we typically have extremely low revenues during that time, and that is going to save us money as well. Employees can either take furlough days or take PTO days during that time, but that will save us on utilities, that will save us on the number of people that are going to be there doing things and so forth.
More questions, Mr. Lipke?
No, I am satisfied that they're making sufficient progress.
Okay. So somehow you pulled this off with $1 million less in revenue.
We have
year to year, and you, it looks like you cut $1 million of expenses.
Yeah, we right. have, you know, I mean, just everything, automating processes. We have, you know, shut down any unused space. We have moved our data center to be able to work that. We've paid off, we finished paying off a building that we have, that data center building, we finished paying that off. We have closed down the Raleigh, which we will have that all wrapped up by January. As far as all the expenses there. And part of it is because our remote system is so great. We actually had centers in New York, Boston, Herndon, North Carolina. We don't need to do that. We can bring students right into the classroom environment through our remote system. So it's just not a necessary expense.
A real part of that difference that you see here comes from three primary sources. One, because of the efficiencies in cross-training, we have decreased our payroll employee expenses by nearly 25%. Included in that, of course, is the attrition and people that retire. We have also saved about $200,000 alone in this cross-training program, providing in-house instructors for classes that we had to previously outsource with 1099 work to contractors to teach for us, which has saved us significantly on that work. And additionally, paying off the data center expense in August was the last payment. The last payment on the lease agreement in Raleigh will be in January. So that is significant as well in giving us more throughput for revenue versus having money going out. There was one other thing I was... Oh, and going to ebooks as the primary paradigm has saved us significantly on printing costs, and the leasing costs for our printers, which is within ranges of copies made and so forth, as well as shipping costs to ship to students when they have books versus electronic materials.
Okay. Great. So
we've also gotten on two additional programs. Even though we don't have the WIOA funding, although I heard on Tuesday at a meeting that it looks like they're going to be able to start using that money to help people again, We have gotten involved with the ACYR program, which is a different program, and the Maricopa County Out-of-School Youth Program as well, which is bringing people in. My CEO and I are also putting together a community service mentoring program for youth to help them understand the value of training and education and give them some real hands-on looking at it and where they can go to improve the community at the same time.
Great. Thank you very much. Ms. Stanfield, do we need a motion?
Yes, you need to make a motion whether or not to approve the regular vocational program license to maintain the surety bond.
That's at $32,034.
Based on the recalculation, and whether or not to submit to quarterly reporting. They have not in the past.
Dr. Niven, I'm prepared to make that motion.
Okay. And so the question is, if you look at the materials, the question is, do you want to put a comma after maintain the security bond 32034 with the follow-up clause and submit to quarterly reporting or not?
Yes.
Mr. Lutke, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. Thank you. My motion would be to approve with stipulation that they maintain the surety bond of $32,000 and that they would provide the committee ongoing quarterly reports as to their progress.
I'll second that. And before we vote, we just want to ensure that you guys agree to the stipulations.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Speak now if ever hold your seat. Right? So moved.
Great.
Yeah, and the quarterly reporting, I think, is really very straightforward.
Very straightforward. I'll send you the
forms
and then it's...
And my expectation is if you continue along the track that you're on...
Fairly
sure. Great.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
Appreciate
it.
Okay. We have interface, technical training. And we have Mike LeGoy here.
How you doing, Terry? Mike LaGioia, Interface Technical Training.
Interface Technical Training is seeking renewal of the 2017 Regular Vocational Program license. They've been licensed by the board since February 2000. Interface previously had been on quarterly reporting. However, in June 2013, the Finance Committee determined quarterly reporting was no longer required and reduced the bonding requirement from $30,000 to $15,000. And basically it's because, and I believe it still is the same case, the number of students in the license program is a very small percentage of Interface's total revenue. But regardless, staff have concerns, financial concerns, and referred the renewal to Finance Committee for your review.
Okay. Mr. LaGioia, do you want to make a comment?
So that is true. It's still the case. We had a program, I'm trying to remember now, back in 2003. We wound it down when I bought the company from Icon. Since then, the individual piece of our business has been less than 5% of total revenue. I think it's been about $30,000, between $30,000 to $100,000 a year. We don't have a program that we go after a consumer market per se. Our program is set up for displaced IT workers. An individual that doesn't have an IT background wouldn't survive in our classes. So 95% of our business is corporate IT vendor authorized training.
Duly noted.
So I guess I'm just looking at the exposure. That's how I kind of laid it out in the record. We have $15,000. I think it's a deposit.
Cash.
Yeah, you have cash. And if we do $30,000 to $40,000 worth of individual business, you know, maybe $100,000.
Right.
We don't actively go after it. We don't actively promote it. It just comes to us.
Mm-hmm. And so it's worth persisting.
Yes.
Even though it's still a very small portion of your total revenue. Okay. Mr. Lukey, do you want to start with questions, or would you like me?
Well, my main question is if they could give us an idea. They have a plan in place to get this turned around, or are they at the mercy of market demand? They have some kind of proactive plan to get this back into the black?
Yes. So 2014, we had a video library that we sold to Lynda.com before they sold to LinkedIn, before they were bought by Microsoft. And we had some non-competes that are moving out, are expiring, and some technologies that have moved in. So at this point, we're looking to digitize the IoT piece that what we have with the vendor-authorized training, bringing in video content, and starting to experiment with some additional modalities for our students. Again, all on the corporate side, not on the individual side. Also, we've cut expenses. I think we've cut maybe $1.2 million out of overhead. This year, we're looking for a break-even with $1 million reduction in gross. So, and we're seeing an uptake in corporate training. So it's a little bit of both, but to a certain degree, we are, you know, looking at market forces in the corporate IT training sector. We continue to work through our digital marketing campaign. 30% to 40% of our corporate side is probably more than that now is remote live. And there was pressure in that market space. And be candid with you, our strategy is last man standing on the vendor side. And so that's how we continue to pursue it and control our cost and get our digital marketing in place. And then try to take our video component, which we still have, all the studio capability, and work on our modality. So, I mean, kind of giving it an over. That's the strategy.
And one other question. If you did not have this offering to the general public, where would these people go normally to get that kind of training?
They would probably go to a typical career program. The reason they come to us is because of the type of program that we have. They are basically coming in and sitting in with corporate IT professionals. And they're displaced IT professionals. If someone didn't have IT background, they wouldn't survive in our class. And so they, I guess, would go to whatever programs are out there. To be honest with you, I don't know. The availability of that. Or other, I don't know where they'd go in the valley. As far as having other classroom training for vendor authorized IT, I don't think there's another vendor, maybe the prior company that was here, but I don't know who else has vendor authorized classroom training.
Thank you. Dr.
Midland,
I don't have any other questions.
Okay. So I guess I'll just preface what I'm going to say is that as far as this board is concerned, my understanding is that, you know, our responsibility is to protect the students, particularly the students in Arizona, and also to protect the state's funds in Arizona. And given the relatively small number of students, 19 students enrolled over the last year, and the amount of revenue that tuition generates, I think that your business concerns are your business concerns. And as far as protecting either the students or the state, I think that what we have in place suffices to do that. And so it's far from me to... You know, I can go through, you know, all of the details, you know, the fact that your cash is significantly lower than it was a year ago and your current current ratio, you know, was low, very low a year ago, and is even lower today. But those are, you know, all concerns that you have to deal with.
No, that's what keeps me.
I guess the only question that I have, and again, it's, you know, I'm not your business consultant, and I know that you have plenty to do, is, you know, on the long-term debt, does that, I assume that accounts for, in terms of the interest on that, you know, some of it is at 15%.
Yeah, that's a chunk of it. That's me putting money in.
Okay.
Right. That's shareholder.
Okay.
That's some of the proceeds from the sale going back into the company.
Okay, and then some of it is at 9.5%.
Those would be people that aren't me.
Okay. So those are, so those you can be, you can negotiate with yourself.
I'm a terrible negotiator. No, those are my funds going back in. Okay. And the rest of that mostly is equipment leasing. I mean, majority of it's equipment leasing.
Right.
It's all leasing.
Okay. In the interest of time and the fact that I think as far as the board is concerned, I think that both the students and the state are well protected. And so I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the 2017 regular vocational program license renewal with the stipulation to maintain the $15,000 cash deposit. My inclination would be to not do the quarterly reporting simply because of the very small number of students relative to the business. Mr. Lukey, do you have any thoughts on that?
I would vote to affirm your motion, Paul.
Okay. All right. So the motion is to approve the 2017 regular vocational program license renewal with the stipulation to maintain the $15,000 cash deposit, period.
Thank you.
And we'll hold on a sec.
Oh.
So before we do that, we have to ask, do you agree to the stipulations? And all in favor, say aye.
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 All right. Moved, seconded, approved. Best of outcomes.
Thank you.
All right. We have the midline. School of transcription.
Dr. Bittman, I believe we have Diana Gabriel, owner, and Chad Sines, owner, both on by phone. Is that correct?
I'm the chief operating officer.
Okay.
Yes, Phil Gabriel, I'm her husband. I'm also a partner in the business. So I'm sitting in instead of Diana.
Okay.
Okay.
Medline School Medical Transcription is seeking renewal of the 2017 regular vocational program license. During my review of the financial statements, it indicated that there were 2 years of losses and therefore referred the renewal to the Finance Committee for a review. As you can see from the timeline below, Medline was previously on financial reporting from 2011 to 2014. As requested, they did supply copies of the financial fiscal year-end financial statements, August financial statements, two-year projections, and a plan to improve.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Herkins and Sines, would you like to make a statement?
Sure. Excuse me. I've got a phone connection, so my voice is a little weird. The last 2 years have been interesting. The transcription and coding are very cyclical in nature. Normally, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, medical coding changed from one system to another, and that pretty much made an interesting issue in both transcription and coding. So we kind of saw sales go down a little bit from that. But we had also had an issue with, we do a lot of military spouse advertising, a lot of military spouse signups. One of our main advertising partners that we use quit taking advertising. And for a small school like us, we can't go to like military.com and stuff that want, you know, huge amounts of money to advertising. So we utilize these smaller companies. And then, you know, the last couple of years, we had some bad debts or off from kids who hadn't paid and weren't able to recover. So far this year, we're actually in the positive right now. And we're looking, the military staff group that we've been working with has actually started their advertising again, so we're looking to get started in that study, and hopefully we'll be able to get some more military staff in this year and then come from here.
Anything else?
And that's what I think about the top of my head. We have one program that we have started and got approved, a administrative medical assisting. Unfortunately, this one hasn't taken off like we wanted it to. It hits more right out of high school, and that's been a tougher group for us to reach from a remote standpoint, because most of these students will come from the guidance counselor office, and not having that kind of connection, that's been a little bit trickier for us to reach them. Listen to a medical transcription student, which can average, you know, maybe between age 18 to 24 for military spouses, but that's the majority of our students who get into it, or 40, 50, and 60 years old looking for a second career. So it's a complete demographic shift for us. So we kind of struggle to grab that group for that class, excuse me, for that program.
Okay. Thanks. So just, you know, looking over the summary, first of all, your retention rate is very high at 87%, and you have 100% placement rate with, you know, 241 students. That's pretty good. Little room for improvement on one, but not the other. That was a joke.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Lukey, do you have any questions or comments?
I do, thank you. Mr. Gabriel, thank you for being on the phone today to answer questions. One of my main questions is to your balance sheet. You look a little skinny on the cash side. I'd like to know at what point will you be borrowing money to be able to deliver the services to your students? Most of your assets look to be in goodwill and as property.
No, fair enough. At this point, we've been able to self-finance as we needed to. Over the last 2 years, inject money in. I have other sources of income, and that's where those funds have come from. But right now, for this year, we're cash flow positive, or at least neutral, and not expecting to need to inject additional funds. But there are other sources of funds available from my other sources of income, if and as necessary.
Okay. All right, thank you. And so your current enrollment at the school is 241?
Yes.
Chad, can you speak to that?
Yeah, it fluctuates a little bit. It averages around 220, 240, somewhere in that range, with, you know, people who enrollments, graduates, and people who leave.
Okay. And I may have missed it in the materials you sent, but the cost of the program is how much?
It ends up being $3,750.
Okay. And does the students private finance it to you, or do they pay that all up front?
They do private finance. They finance through us, and that was where a lot of our bad debt had come from. We kind of finally completed off the books last year with the last of that, and that's part of what hit us hard with some of our numbers. But yeah, they unless they're using a credit card, we don't do any student loans, anything like that.
Okay.
Most students, if I may add to that, most students are paying monthly, so the monthly amounts are under $200, and so generally we found that that's working quite well. People can manage that without taking a loan, with the exception of my CAA students. Those are government subsidized, and that's paid all up front. But otherwise, most of our students are on a monthly payment plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. So I'm still trying to figure out, if things go bad and the cash that you're somehow propping up your school with is not very transparent in your financials, that you can't see where that infusion of cash is coming from. If that were to dry up, how would you make your schools whole?
We have not actually had to put cash in yet for a while. This is actually, the number there is at the end of the month, everything's paid off at the end of the month, and then we actually have payments that come in the 28th that would show up to the 29th. So that is kind of, and I didn't realize that's actually the date that that was cool, but our students mainly pay twice a month, on the 15th and the 28th, and then it shows up in our books on the 29th. And so that's kind of where there's like that overlap right there of about a day, and that would end up being around, I think between the two of those, between $25,000 to $103,000 would have shown up in the next couple of days.
So to answer your question, we aren't propping up the business. It is self-funding, and we have not been profitable in the last 2 years, but we're confident with our we've submitted some projections to you, and we're tracking exactly to the 2017 projection. And we have every, our costs are pretty fixed. In other words, we can add students without increasing much additional costs. Our materials are paid for. People are on fixed, you know, our payroll is fixed. And therefore, we see upside now that we've digested all those 2 years of bad debt and everything which we took the hit on in 2017, things are nice and clean. And moving along, you know, after that big adjustment, moving along quite well as far as the cash flow goes.
Okay. And where in your financial statements, either the balance sheet or your financial statements, would I find the amount of the bad debt? I'm not seeing it on the balance sheet.
So you're looking at the 2016
yes.
balance sheet?
Yes, I am.
Do you recall, Chad, how we handled that? I think it's the depreciation.
The account handled that one, so let me look and see. I don't know offhand myself.
We have a separate independent accountant that we use, so he's not on the call, but because we have to pay him by the hour when we use him. But what we did, let me...
Okay,
yeah, I'm obviously having difficulty answering that question.
Yeah. All right, very good. One last question then. On your income statements, your contract services now, are those, is that contract labor, is that what that is?
Yes.
Yes, none of our people are employees.
Okay, very good. Okay. All right, Dr. Nevin, that's all the only questions I have.
Okay. I imagine that since most of your tuition is paid, you know, either on a monthly basis, I'm not sure how much bad debt you would have. So a couple of just observations and questions. Your total tuition for the last year and similar for this year of $78,529 is from about 241 students during that time, thereabouts. So the average, the actual net tuition per student would be somewhere around between $300 and $400. Is that right?
Some of these students, the way their payment plan goes, they pay it off before they're actually out of the program. So there's several months that have, where they can take up to 30 months to do it. So some of these students may have paid off their program a few years, up to 12 months earlier.
So,
and so we're not receiving new money from them.
Right. So let me ask you a question. So in terms of the cost of the tuition rates, let's say for administrative medical assisting, 240 clock hours is $900. Advanced medical transcription, 1160 clock hours, $3,750, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what they pay?
They pay $3,750. The clock hours is the time they spend by doing their assignments.
Right, but their tuition, they're actually paying $3,750. You're not discounting it super steeply.
No.
So I guess my question is, if you have 241 students and they're distributed among several different programs, but most of them are in the medical transcription program, right?
Yes.
Then shouldn't the tuition, if it's accounted on an accrual basis, shouldn't it be much higher? That the cash received could get spread out over a period of however long it is that they're taking to pay for it. But
it's spread out over around 12 to 18 months, depending on which one they're in. But it, so a lot of our students have already paid off their full financial commitment, so they're done paying for the program.
Right. So I guess what I don't understand, and what I don't understand is that shouldn't your tuition revenue be much higher than what's reported here? Like if you have 241 students, if you have 241 students, and you have several programs that range from 900 to 3750, if you have 241 students, let's just say the average tuition is $1,000. That's $241,000 of tuition, right? But you only have, you only report 78,000. Now I'm not saying that, like, I'm not the IRS and you know, auditing you. I'm just wondering, it may actually have an adverse effect on the way you're reporting to this board, because if you've provided the service for somebody and they're still continuing to pay it, you've earned all of that. You've earned all of that revenue, regardless of whether they fulfilled their payment obligations or not.
Maybe a couple things. One is we had a large bad debt accrual because a lot of students. So some students don't finish the program. They opt out, and they may have paid a part of the tuition, but not the whole tuition, because we had different payment plans in place in the past. We've had to make, so it's very difficult to dissect the gross revenue into the amount of students, because we had some, very few that were paid completely up front. Most were paying as they go, and some don't finish the program, and therefore we never realized it. Before, we used to accrue the entire tuition up front. And then if they didn't finish the program or dropped out, then we had to write off the uncollected part. We tried to collect because we have certain conditions they have to meet. If they're in the course for a certain amount of time, they owe us the whole amount of tuition. But it was proving impossible or very difficult with a very low success rate to collect the balance of the tuition. And so we made a big adjustment in 2006 to write off all those students that were no longer active but were still accrued for in the revenue, and we've gone to a model where we're now accruing at the end of each month the revenue for each student as they remain registered and active in the program. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but we've made those changes in our accounting system and in our policies to accommodate the reality that remote learning students are not always going to stick with something, and we were accruing a lot of revenue. So our revenue has actually come down in the last 3 years, but from a cash basis, we report now to the IRS on a cash basis because it's more reflective of what's going on in business, because of all these accruals we had when we acquired the business a few years ago that were misleading the actual revenue numbers. Because of accruing a full tuition for a student when they enroll, as opposed to are they active or not in the program.
Okay. Well, in your submission, out of the 241 students, you only have 19 dropping out, which gives you a retention rate of 87%. So I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't. I don't understand it based on the numbers that you've submitted to us. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if 19 people, that would be $19,000 out of
$241,000.
And so, most of these bad debts weren't just from last year, they were over the previous years. And the way we're doing it now, with the more month to month, we're having a lot less issues with the bad debt issues. But some of these debts were from a couple of years back. I just kind of kept sitting there. We tried, like I said, we had them in collections, and we tried, you know, how do we collect on these things? And finally, we're done with trying to even attempt to collect on them. But our bad debt issues have significantly went down over the past year. Very, very significantly went down.
So I guess if I understand this correctly, you are not accounting on an accrual basis. You're accounting solely on a cash basis.
For the IRS, yes.
For us also.
I thought I saw a note somewhere saying these were accruals. Do you recall?
It does say that.
I thought we were doing accrual on those.
I thought that was a requirement. I'd have to check with our account.
Is it a requirement? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a requirement. So, Mr. Lukey, help me out here. Am I?
No, you're spot on.
Okay.
Even your accounts receivable seems rather skinny at $11,275.
So I would
think you would have more in the way of receivables if you're still waiting for people to pay you.
We are not going to be able to pay us any longer. All those bad debts are gone. They were all written off.
Right. So, as you had said earlier, you have current students, and some of them pay you up front, but most of them pay you over time. And so that those payments that you're anticipating that they'll eventually come in, those get posted to accounts receivable, of which you're only showing $11,000 owed you. Do you follow the line of thinking there?
Chad, isn't that on a monthly basis? Basically,
yes.
We're only accruing for the month we're in terms of receivables?
Yeah, but an accrual basis is based on a fiscal year. And so, let me ask guidance from staff here, from our executive director. I think that, you know, you, because you're using an accountant on a sort of as-needed basis, I believe that you're sort of presenting these materials in sort of like a hybrid way. It's not really accrual, but it's not really cash. And since the board requires it to be presented on an accrual basis, I think that these need to be revised before we can make a decision moving forward. And furthermore, I think that you are potentially undermining your own value of the school, and, you know, potentially the tax benefits to the owners here by not accounting on an accrual basis. And so
I'm confusing it, maybe it's my error. What we do is we send the students an invoice each month, and so their invoice for their payment for that month goes out the first of each month.
And yeah, but when they sign the enrollment agreement and they enroll for a program, you know, the enrollment agreement is a contractual agreement. And so I understand the problems that you encounter in sometimes collecting, but it doesn't make sense to me that you have an 87% retention rate, and yet, you know, you're really only reflecting a third or a quarter of the actual revenue that represents the work that
that your school provides or the instruction that your school provides. So let me ask Ms. Stanfield, what options do we have in terms of, you know, when does their license currently go through, and can we ask them to come back without them being unlicensed?
Well, and I'm just throwing this, I'm thinking too, because I just did, I rounded it up on, so I could do the math. Even if you do the 50 students that they take in that year, times 3,700, it's like 185,000.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Right.
Okay, so basically, their license, they're in the July license renewal, so their license has expired as of June 30th. Where licensure works is it remains in effect until final action has been taken. So basically, they are operating on an expired license. You could refer this to the board for further review and request that the financial statements be revised or looked at or whatever. The problem is timing. The October meeting is like, they wouldn't have time to get it by October.
Okay.
So if you wanted to keep it within the purview of the finance committee, you could have them come back in December.
Okay. And would they... we would approve the license in October, but they would have to come back in December.
Well, no. But no, we wouldn't be able to... Okay. Two ways. You'd have to refer it to October, which they're in time. The next board meeting isn't until January.
Okay.
So, to speed the process up, even though it would still be 6 months into an expired license, you could keep it under the purview of the committee. Make that request, postpone it, ask them to have the financial statements reviewed and revised, and to be back before you at your December meeting.
Okay. And they can operate?
Yes.
They can continue to operate?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we need a motion to do that?
No.
Okay.
Just say that that's, well, because you're going to require them to do something, perhaps, yes.
Okay. Mr. Luque, are you able to, you're close enough to Ms. Stanfield's speakerphone there, so I assume that you heard all of this. Is this translating well across the phone?
It is. I'm not sure I can restate it coherently, though.
Yeah, I was counting on you for the motion. No, I'm just kidding. I can make it.
Oh, you were. All right. Very good.
Okay. Are you okay with this course of action? In other words, that we would defer action on renewing the license with the stipulation that the Medline School of Transcription return in December to this committee?
With revised?
With revised financial statements that are presented on an accrual basis, according to GAAP.
Yes, I agree. That would make sense.
Right, that's my motion.
Hopefully, they have a CPA that understands that.
Okay, so that's my motion. Would you second it?
I second it.
Folks on the phone from Midline School of Transcription, are you willing to agree to the stipulations we just provided?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So moved. All right, see you guys in December. And seriously, have it really buttoned down in December.
Because the bad debt expense, I mean, it's not showing on 2016.
There's a lot missing, and I think it would be to your advantage in a number of ways, not just with respect to this board. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Brighton College. And we have Paul Zagnoni.
Yes, good morning.
At your August 25th, 2016 meeting, the board approved the 2016 Render Vocational and Degree Granting License with the stipulations to post a $45,000 surety bond and to submit quarterly reporting. September 26th, We received the $45,000 surety bond, and the licenses were issued. Brighton is now seeking renewal of their 2017 licenses.
Great. Mr. Zagnoni, do you want to make any comments, statements?
I can. We did, just wanted to share, we went through our five-year reaccreditation visit on September 14th by our accrediting body, DEAC. So that's kept us busy in the last 6 to 8 months.
When was that? I'm sorry.
September 14th this month.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
So you're in the post-visit refractory period now?
Exactly.
And then I start bugging them.
Exactly. There is no rest, as you know. But yes. So, wanted to share, yes.
Okay. Mr. Lukey, do you want to start, or would you like me to start? Happy either way.
I'll let you start.
Okay. Let's see what I'm looking at here.
I can tell you how I recognize revenue if you'd like.
I assume.
That's confusing.
Okay. So, a question that I think that I raised at a previous meeting was about your burn rate. And that you had very significant enrollment projections. Back in March, you had a goal of 160 new enrollments, according to whoever was here, Mr. Fernandez. And it looks like there are 62 currently enrolled during the year. At this point, it looks like you're on course to lose about $414,000 based on the current, the 6 months in 2017. Which is a little bit better than 2016.
Right.
But given your current assets measured against your current liabilities, how long can you continue on this rate? And what are you going to? I guess that's the first question.
Yeah. And part of the dilemma has been when we're going through this reaccreditation, as you know, you're sort of in a frozen state. There's nothing you can do. And the five programs that they're reviewing are five programs that are our best programs, so we couldn't make any changes and modifications. So now that that is over, those things are in the process right now. Our legal nurse consulting program is our best program, and that is going to come out modified in 4 weeks as a nurse paralegal program and two legal nurse consulting programs that have witness expert included into it with a little bit of a tuition increase. Our home inspection program just went to a non-credit program, which we wanted to do for the last 6 months as we can enroll more people in a non-credit format. Things like that that we couldn't do the last 6 months held us back from enrolling more students. And on top of that, we were spending a lot of money to get through the reaccreditation process. The fees to DEAC alone were $30,000, let alone all the consultants that we had to hire to, within 6 months, get everything in place for the visit. We had a change of ownership January 1st, which was me becoming a 50% owner, along with the other partners that were already there. And we asked for an extension at that time, did not receive it. So we had a lot of work to get done in 6 months to prepare for the visit, and that was a lot of the expenses as well. So with all this, with the expenses going away, we feel we get our expenses down to about $75,000 a month. We've been able now to reduce some of our programs, and the Cybersecurity Institute is one of those as well. We can now actually market our IT programs in a way that we know we can enroll students to. Along with getting private student loans, we could do that as well. We just implemented private student loans after the 14th. Excuse me. And so far this month, I think we have the numbers here. We have $65,000 in private student loans so far this month. And one of the advantages of that for us is on the legal nurse consulting side, the private student loan company is going to purchase those loans back from us at 75% value. Those loans are $4,000. We have five of those loans this month alone. So the following month, they'll buy those back at 75% value. So that immediately helps us with cash flow. We enroll about 20 legal nurse consultants students a month. So the goal is to cash flow Brighton as quickly as possible. And the way this looks to us is in October, November, we'll be cash flowing because of the private student loans. And again, these are all things that we couldn't do because of the reaccreditation business. So we've been sort of waiting to implement a lot of these things the minute the visit was over. So the minute they left, we started implementing.
Okay. So you're anticipating cutting your expenses by about $150,000 based on...
Our monthly run rate's $90,000 or so. It went up a little bit. It's been a little less.
Right. Excuse so if you get down to $75,000, you're looking at $150,000. So that would decrease your deficit down to, let's say, $300,000. Mm-hmm. So now you're saying that you're going to increase enrollment to make up for the other, or are there other sources of revenue that are going to close that gap so that you can become profitable?
The goal is to increase enrollment. Initially, the goal is to increase cash flow, so we can begin by cash flowing initially and then keep the enrollments increasing to become profitable. But the goal right now is to cash flow, hopefully by 1st of November. Eventually, those 15 to 20 legal nurse consulting students will all be funded by loans. Interesting thing that's happening, we're finding out, at least small sample size, by having only private student loans available, 50% of the nurses are paying cash, which is fine with us if you want to pay cash up front or take a loan. Either way, we get cash. So it's actually modeling out very nicely, and that has been the goal, is to... Based on that cash they generate and the auto pay students we currently have, and also Deseret Industries, which is a cash up front payment program for us as well, we can generate about $100,000 a month or so of cash. And that's the plan, is to start generating that in November. We have $75,000 in expenses, we start cash flowing.
Okay. What's the, in your quarterly report, there's an other expense of $150,000.
I wouldn't know. I have to research that, to be honest with you.
It's $275,000 a year.
I don't know. I'd have to research that and get back to Terry. I don't know.
I couldn't find it in the
just
income statement. Well, can I approach the So Mr. Lukey, it's in the quarterly report and it's under other income expenses, and it looks like a big chunk.
Yeah, it is.
Big chunk of money. And I didn't see it in your detailed expenses.
I'll be honest, I'd have to research that one for you and send it back to Terry.
Okay. Yeah. Hey. I don't have any other questions, Mr. Lukey.
Yeah, looking at your balance sheet, if I'm not mistaken, it doesn't look like there's a lot of cash there. You're listing one bank account. I think it'd be $5,000, and then you've got accounts receivable of about $1,089,000. Can you tell us a little bit about at what point do you write off bad debt? What's your formula for writing bad debt off?
Yeah, and that will be something we tackle this year. When we purchased the school, there was just a lot of receivables there that just aren't real. And then with the change of ownership, that's something we haven't addressed, so that's something we will address in 17. One of the partners has issued a line of credit, $500,000 line of credit, which is what we will use to get us through the rest of the year. That's where the cash will come from, because there is not a lot of cash. Correct.
Okay. So of the money that you're expecting to receive, you know, it's helpful for us to know how real that is. And most companies have got, you know, some, got to have some guidance from their accounting firms to say this debt is no longer viable beyond, say, 4 months. You haven't received any payments in 4 months. You need to write it off as bad debt. Do you have a formula that you apply to your accounts receivable? How does the committee know that what we see on your balance sheet is actually solid debt?
Yeah, and I, to be honest with you, at this time, I can't tell you that. That is something that will be scrubbed this year, so when we move into 18, it will be accurate. Again, with the purchase of the school, there's just a lot of receivables that were just there for that. Just, I, to be honest with you, it's not accurate as receivables.
All right. That does not leave me with a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Is it possible for you to provide that? I'm thinking,
yes,
we're headed towards having you to, in your reporting, and bring back something to the committee that would allow us to have a better idea of how solid your financial position is.
Oh, absolutely. On the receivable side?
Right.
Yes. I can do that.
I have a question.
And then, yeah, Terry, go.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
All right. I'm looking for a projection. You know, if you say, no, I can tell us where they feel they're going to end their fiscal year. Are we going to see, they're going to give you a $500,000 loss, a $400,000 loss. What's the most current projection going forward?
Okay.
I think that's a question for today. That wasn't the take-home question. That was the right here.
Yeah, it wasn't whimsical.
And not to be submitted in the future. Like I, we've submitted some projections to date, and in some enrollment data as well. In fact, we just got the September enrollments, and we have 42 enrollments this month, which was up from last year. Enrollments are increasing, and again, with the student loans now being in place, that's something that Brighton's never had. It's not a Title IV school, so it never had a funding mechanism in place, and that was one of the things that when I became a 50% partner in January, that I wanted to take care of, because I've been in this business a long time. If you don't have a funding mechanism, the payment plans are okay, but it seems like students nowadays, it's hard to compete with schools that have Title IV if you don't have some sort of student loan where they can even defer payments for a while they're in school. So it's too early to tell. We just went live with loans September 15th, but again, we already have $60,000 in student loans. That it's helped us a lot. We have a medical billing and coding program, and we've been unable to compete with Title IV schools in the past. We can generate leads on pay-per-click at less than $50 per lead, which is very competitive, but we've been unable to enroll because we didn't have a loan program. So far now, we've been very successful the second half of September enrolling students into that program. So again, the goal is to cash flow end of October, November, and to get as close to profitability as we can, as soon as we can. I just don't have a hard projection for you right now. I mean, I have the projections we submitted, and we're going to try to get as close. We want to get profitable as quickly as we can. Trust me.
I guess if I could jump in, Mr. Lukey, the goal on the pro forma was to lose $134,000. It looks like at this point, you know, halfway through the year, you know, you're at roughly negative $207,000. So if we were to just continue along that trajectory, you would be over $400,000 as opposed to $134,000. So I guess if I could put some parameters on it, we're based on, you know, we're another quarter, September 30th, you don't have the financials, but we're another quarter along, based on enrollment and your internal numbers. I think Mr. Lukey is asking, you know, can you project where you'll be from the 420 kind of worst case scenario that nothing changed,
mm-hmm.
compared to the 134 in the red that you projected at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I can say it will be better than the 420. It hasn't improved up until today because, again, with the visit or the reaccreditation visit, that was an expensive endeavor. Now it can start to improve after that, and we've already seen some improvements already with increased enrollments with the student loans. We have these other programs. We actually, October 1, we're implementing an education resource fee, which is roughly a 10% increase in tuition. So there's things we can do now that we couldn't. So this last quarter will be better. There will be an improvement, so it won't extrapolate.
So whatever improvement you're saying is going to be in the last 3 months?
Yes, it won't be up in the prior to that, for sure.
Okay. Mr. Lukey, did you have any other questions?
No, I'm satisfied. I'm ready to make a motion if you have no other questions.
Terry's chomping at the bit. She has a question.
You kept stating there was a change of ownership, that you became 50% owner.
Well, it was Lozado, which I was a part of. So the other partners went away January 1st, and I remained. So it was a transition of ownership January 1st.
Because before it was
Lozado,
Lernke,
and Lozado,
which is who you currently have with.
Correct, they're 50% of
Delkino or whatever.
Corcini.
Okay. I always butcher it. And now instead of trade training,
right,
which was Larry Gudis,
yes,
at 50%, he's no longer a part.
Correct.
Of,
it's just.
So that's a 50% change in ownership. Did that trigger a change of ownership with Diet?
No.
No.
No, because it was really just a transition. It was, since I was 45% owner of that trade training.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. Still am. It's just the other partners didn't want to participate.
Oh, okay. So you still have part of trade training who is over here.
Exactly. That's
with
45%.
Sonoran.
SDI, exactly.
5%, but then.
Right.
Okay, so was it 45?
Right. And I went through all
the 45. Right. Oh, yeah. You just skinny by. Did you send us a letter?
I did. Absolutely.
Okay, sorry.
Went through DAC, got the approval, sent everything to you. Yes.
It's not the database. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I need to clarify that.
Sure.
I thought I was going to have to
change your offset.
Okay. If there are no other questions, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the regular vocational degree granting licenses with the stipulation that the $45,000 surety bond be maintained and the continued quarterly reporting. And I would ask that at the next quarterly reporting that you address all of the questions that Mr. Lukey brought
receivables.
Up on how you're treating receivables.
Okay.
So moved.
Seconded. Do you approve? Do you agree to the stipulation?
I do agree.
Zanioni? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So moved. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's time to galvanize.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joanna Shea on the phone for Galvanize. I'm the Director of Regulatory Affairs here, and with me I have Stephanie Donner, Company Counsel for Galvanize, Diana Vowell, General Manager for Galvanize Phoenix, and Brett Reed, Senior Accountant for Galvanize. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Okay. Hey, would you like to...
Sure.
Introduce us to Galvanize, as if we hadn't read the Business Journal recently.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Two-page spread in the Business Journal, right? No?
Yes, that was us.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. Take it away,
Chair. At your meeting in August of 2016, the board approved the conditional vocational program license for Galvanize with the stipulations to increase the letter of credit to correct the 70% refund in the enrollment agreement catalog and to submit to quarterly reporting. On September 19th, we received the $230,000 letter of credit. Galvanize had been on, was scheduled before the Finance Committee, but because they did not begin enrollments until 2017, I had pulled them from the March agenda, then you were unable to meet in June. So you haven't seen them since renewal. And they are obviously seeking renewal. Since they are conditional and will be going to regular, the committee at this point in time just needs to make a recommendation to the full board regarding the financial status because they automatically go before the board in October.
To go from conditional to regular.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And either Joanna or your colleagues, would you like to make a statement?
Sure. Thanks so much, Joanna, back on the phone again. We've been operating in Phoenix for about a year now, and Diana would be happy to provide a little bit more color on how our operations have been received. But we've seen 43 students currently enrolled. We've graduated 10 students at this point. Five of whom have secure jobs, graduated in June of this year. The next class that we see graduating in about 2 weeks, we have 2 of 8 who've already secured jobs for our data science class. Excited again to be in Phoenix and happy to answer all of the questions that the board has.
Yeah, I can add a little bit more commentary to that. This is Diana Bell. I'm the general manager at Galvanize Phoenix. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay, great. So we opened the physical campus about 6 months ago. When we met with you a year ago, we were under construction. Joanna will talk to the student numbers and the enrollment numbers. I will also let you know the campus itself is buzzing. I heard someone mention that you saw it from the Business Journal. I think we've been in the Business Journal 5 or 6 times now. It's really changing the face of the tech scene in the Phoenix community, and we're thrilled at how the community has responded. As you know, we bring industry and education together on our campuses, and to let you know how that's looking in Phoenix, we are just over 6 months open here, and we have 112 companies working out of this campus, from startups to larger companies, which is providing a tremendous talent pipeline to connect those companies with our students who are graduating from our program. So it's going well, and if you haven't gotten a tour of this campus, I would be happy to give anyone a tour.
Great, thank you. I remember a year ago you were going to be serving beer there. Is that still on tap? That was Mr. Lukey. That was actually quite the topic of conversation at the time. Did you end up doing that? Just out of curiosity. Remember they were going to serve beer?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Stephanie, do you want to take that one or you want me to?
Yeah, so this is Stephanie Donner, and I remember when you all answered that question, and I was grateful to be sitting right in front of you discussing beer. We have a locked tag on our campus, mostly available for, and we call all of our facility campuses, but mostly available for our member communities, not our students.
Okay. All right, that was a throwaway comment. But thanks for answering.
But there you go. You got the answer. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
And visitors, right? Tour.
Well, visitors, if they are of age and we get to vet them properly.
I can say that. I don't drink soda. So I'm not really fishing for beer. Before I turn over to Mr. Lukey, just a
point of detail. According to your application, LR Form 1, it says that you are not current in your payments of federal and state liabilities and workers' compensation insurance. You better take care of that.
Oh, man, we missed that. Normally,
you know, that's one of
I can actually speak to that. That is probably an error because currently all of our workers' compensation insurance is taken care of through TriNet. We use a PEO as an external partner. So I would be very surprised if somehow that was not current. So we will look into that and update if necessary.
Yeah, you just need to update it. The problem is that if that was question number one, nobody would get that. Nobody would make that mistake.
I do it all.
But it's question number seven, mm-hmm. and the answers to questions 1 through 6 is always no. You know,
and that's why
not
it's
always
usually
no.
caught.
And so that was so
unless
fun.
There's a no
okay.
in the file.
Mr. Lukey, do you have questions? Do you want to tee us off, or would you like me to get started?
Here. I'll start. So I'm looking at the income statement. That you provided the committee. And I was wondering if you could help us understand what other revenue, what that consists of.
This is Brett Reed, the senior accountant. Other revenue is pretty much all of the payments from our member companies rent out their individual spaces or individuals working in the shared area, basically all of the other aspects of Galvanize unrelated to the actual students and classes.
Okay. All right, very good. And
I'm sorry, this is Stephanie, really quickly to interject. Would it be helpful to you to understand our other revenue streams so that you can understand the full picture? In addition to the student tuition, there's three other primary revenues for the company. One is the membership, just like as Brett just explained. The second is event revenue, because we do have a significant number of events, particularly on our Phoenix campus. And the third is what we call enterprise revenue, which is work that we do training employees of various corporations. So it's not the same student interface, but it's interfacing with employees of companies, similar curriculum.
And
could
okay. you just show me, Mr. Lucey, what page is that on? Where did you see other revenue?
On the quarterly report.
Is it on the quarterly report?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see it.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The associated expenses, all these other revenue sources, do they appear in this income statement?
They do on line 15 of their income and expense.
Okay, very good. That's kind of an NC 508, 509. And as you look, now you're almost at the end of this quarter, how close would you be to the projected tuition revenues that shows in this report?
One moment.
What was that?
A bit here, Seth. I'm having to pull that right now. It's going to be a little tough without September. We don't really book all of our revenue until we close the books at the end of the month. All right. So I can ballpark it through August, but I can't. So we're at 1.1 through August. So, and we did. Should we do one
okay.
August?
I just love the sound of a 10 key in the morning.
I would anticipate, and again, this is best estimate of having total revenue through September 1.4.
Okay, very good. Paul, I don't have any other questions.
Okay. So I guess from a in terms of the forecasting, you know, the forecast for this year, according to your projections, is $2.4 million for total revenue, and so it looks like you would either come in shy of that or make it up in the last quarter. From an expense standpoint, it looks like you are tracking pretty much on your expenses, and so I assume based on the strength of your balance sheet that this is sustainable in terms of the losses both here in Phoenix and across the enterprise. That was kind of a question. Or maybe let me rephrase it as a question. You know, your loss in 16 was $13 million. And it looks like there would be a net loss here in Phoenix, and I'm not sure about across the other campuses in this year also. And so is that part of the business plan to be able to, like, how many years before you become profitable?
The company as a whole, or the Phoenix campus?
Either one.
We are seeing the company as a whole being profitable by end of the year. A lot of things in motion, but that is what our most recent forecasts are showing us. And similarly, we think the same thing for Phoenix. Might take one more Q, they're a little newer, but we feel the entire company will be profitable by December.
Okay. That's my only question. And I would like to maintain a motion to maintain the $230,000 letter of credit and continue quarterly reporting.
I so moved.
And I will second. And are you guys on board with that over at Galvanize?
Yeah,
you are.
Just
Stephanie,
that's fine.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Joanna, this is Terry. Could you please send me, in case it hasn't been corrected, the question, correct answer to question number 7, and then just email it to me?
You got it, Terry. I'll get that over.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Moving on, I believe that we have Merit Business College. And representing Merit, Mr. Todd Harris.
I had just to correct it, right? It's Merit Business School.
I'm sorry. Okay. Terry, do you want to?
Sure. Merit Business School was formerly Executive Academy of Scottsdale, and they've been licensed by the board since September 2012 as a non-credit degree granting institution. The board approved the change of ownership from Maggie,
Magdalena Cutler.
Thank you. Ms. Cutler, and a change of name at your meeting in February 2016. Merit is seeking accreditation from DEAC. However, they had to begin all over based upon the change of ownership. The
the SER report will be due in December, was due in December 2015. Now you can begin in November, is that correct?
That would have been the earliest. We're looking at
2018. Okay, and that's when they, quarter of 2018. They are seeking for renewal of their provisional. As a provisional degree granting, they go to the full board automatically. So it's the finance committee's responsibility at this time to review the financial position and supply a recommendation to the board.
Thanks. Mr. Harris, you want to make a statement?
As Terry mentioned, there was a change of ownership. We've been working through those back issues. We primarily serve an international business student audience for MBAs and graduate certificates. The majority of our students are overseas, and working through that with a change of ownership, we are starting to do newer marketing and bring in students from the Philippines, the Middle East, and India as well. We had the addition of the certificates in business and leadership as well as in entrepreneurship to add additional revenue streams. Those are still coming online this year. Primarily is the MBA, the online MBA. It's entirely an online program. So online marketing is very important. We have a partnership with Keystone Marketing overseas to bring in more leads cost effectively. And also, I've been working with Google AdWords consultants to improve that lead generation, which is very important to us. As Terry mentioned, we're still working with DEAC. Whether it's the first quarter, we believe sometime first or second quarter, we can begin that process. I went through the certification process for DEAC to make sure I can assist with the self-study and any other issues. That's going to be an expensive proposition next year, so we're making sure we're prepared for that as well. We've shown kind of small profitability through the middle of this year. Some of that was recognition of revenue. But we have several new students coming on board, and our marketing efforts are proving positive, so it's a matter of just providing the resources to put into marketing, and we think that's very positive. We can put more of those marketing resources, we think it would be very effective. The curriculum and faculty are in place. It's a very low-cost operation currently, so we feel pretty good just about generating more quality students to fill the classrooms.
Okay.
And by the way, we got back some of our student surveys and from the graduates, and they're very healthy, very encouraging. Most of our students are already employed, so we don't have to worry about finding them jobs. Although I think the alumni and career services will be a big factor in the future, at least initially, from Magdalena's efforts and Merit Business School's efforts, it's very positive.
Mr. Lucy, do you want to start us off, or would you like to?
All right. Well, I have a number of questions. But it sounds like the school's in transition, trying to take advantage of getting fully accredited. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, the transition from former ownership with some former students and making sure if all those students complete the program. And then the second phase of getting accredited is obviously the largest hurdle, which will help us with our price point. We actually think where we are price-wise for the MBA might be a little expensive, especially with our foreign students. So the accreditation will certainly help with that validation and help us support our pricing. And we may need to look at our price points if it's going to go beyond more than 6 months. We may want to be more competitive on pricing.
Okay. So at the present time, how many students do you have in the school, in your programs?
About 7 or 8. Those are primarily in the online MBA program, and we've taught out the executive MBA program.
Okay. And I wasn't sure if I could see anything in the financial information you provided us. What would your guesstimate be on your cash balance for the school right now is what?
Several thousand dollars, primarily. And a lot of the funding would come from Educadium
LLC, which is a course training and nonprofit course hosting company, and that's been profitable through this year. As a backup, I can provide funds as needed.
Okay. All right. Sounds like lots of sweat equity that's being poured into this enterprise.
Well, we're trying to leverage the parent company through customer support. As I said, I wish we could throw more cash on the marketing side. We're just trying to be judicious in how we put money into it as we go along.
You know, given the nature of what's in front of you and the number of students you have, I don't see a great risk to continue for you to continue in the process as it relates to the state of Arizona. But it is paper thin in terms of what you have to offer. A lot of what you have on your balance sheet is goodwill in terms of assets. At the close of 2016, you had $5,000 of receivables, no cash, and a lot of goodwill. So, going forward, one would hope that we would see a much more robust side of the balance sheet.
Agreed.
Paul, I don't have any other questions. I think there's a lot of uncertainty there, but nothing that is overly alarming.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. And I guess just out of curiosity, Mr. Harris, since there's few students, minimal expenses, so you work really hard to do that, but there's also very little compensation for the people who are doing the work. How much time, just out of curiosity, how much of your time do you spend on the Merit School of Business?
It's up to 20 hours a week or more.
A week?
Yeah.
At this rate, the Arizona minimum, if you're in Tempe, the minimum wage in Tempe would be, it's a lot of, it seems like it's a lot of lot of your time.
As an entrepreneur, one doesn't calculate, it's a little bit, right. That way. But it's exciting.
But it is a significant amount of time.
It is. It's also quite gratifying, and we also have a goal of reaching accreditation. And we know that next year won't be easy. We're going to have to throw in additional resources for that, but we think that'll be a turning point. I did have one question for the board, and maybe for Terry. If we want to revise our tuition, are there any guidelines for that? It would probably be downward, if anything, to make sure that we can appeal to a broader demographic internationally.
Now, that's one of the more fairly easy things to do. There's a program modification form on our website. You just fill that in, submit it, and we make the changes and prove it, send it back.
Good. Okay. So we may be doing that.
Okay. And I do not believe that we need a motion.
Just a recommendation.
Recommendation to the full board. So we need a motion. The recommendations of the full board to continue the provisional license. Here it is. The provisional license with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained and continue quarterly reporting.
So moved.
Seconded. Do you agree to the stipulations, Mr. Harris?
I do. To clarify, was it 15,000 or it may have been larger?
I think
I'm happy about 15,000.
No. It's 45.
I'm sorry. 45,000.
No, that's, I had a typo.
45,000, is that, so that would be it.
That's fine.
Right. Good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we go to the University of the Medical Sciences, Dr. Pitts, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Since you're not here present, you didn't see me drinking a full bottle of something out of here. And so can we take a 5-minute break?
Sure.
We'll return.
Sure.
I'll keep the phone open, so we'll be...
That'll wake you up.
We're back.
All right, we're back in session. Mr. Lukey, are you there?
I am.
All right. All right. Next up is the University of Medical Sciences, Arizona. And we have on the phone Dr. Janice Pitts.
Yes, University of Medical Sciences, Arizona is seeking renewal of the 2017 professional degree granting license. They've been licensed by the board since 2011, and they will be seeking accreditation with HLC, and they've provided to you an updated timeline. Again, because it is a provisional license, they will be going before the full board in October, and the finance committee is to review them and make any financial recommendation for the board's consideration in October.
Okay. Dr. Pitts, do you have any
yes.
statements that you would like to make?
Sure. Good morning again to everybody. Just as a little update, we don't have as much to report from the last meeting that we had, but we continue to assist the American Physical Therapy Association in reaching their vision that they have for the physical therapy profession. They hope to accomplish that by 2020. And our process is that we are offering the transitional DPT, as the APT's vision is for the physical therapy profession to be 100% at the doctoral level. We also continue to keep tabs on the healthcare industry as it relates to rehabilitation. To design programs that will help advance the various professions within rehabilitation forward. Each semester, we are happy with the process with regards to us moving forward and with our graduates. So every semester, we've been graduating a few individuals, and our enrollment also continues to maintain.
Mr. Lukey, would you like to start us off, or would you like me to?
Well, I can start off.
Okay.
I was wondering if the good doctor could tell us a little bit about the linkage between CAPTI and HLC. Does CAPTI, do you have to seek recognition from CAPTI to award these degrees?
No, not at this time. For CAPTI, they only accredit entry-level degrees, or I should say entry-level physical therapy degrees. So because we only offer the post-professional, or the other term is transitional doctoral degrees, CAPTI does not accredit those, because from their standpoint, they believe once a therapist has already gone through an accredited institution at the entry level, there's no need to accredit the post-professional degrees.
Okay, very good. And your delivery system is entirely online, or is it an on-ground program?
Majority of it is online. The only time a student would come to campus is if they chose to do what we call our emphasis track, which in the orthopedic or neuro track, or pediatric track, some of the courses have a lab component to it, and there is an intensive 3-day lab that they would do. They would come to campus for that one time for the semester.
Okay. All right, very good. Well, I'm happy to say that I'm married to a DPT.
Oh, congratulations. Yes.
Yeah, I think the husband of a doctoral candidate should get all the credit for
absolutely
from me every year, learning terms like evidence-based research, outcome like this stuff. So anyway, I commend you on your mission. I think it's a worthy one. I have been quoted in
the phone. Is that like a disclosure, conflict of interest, and you're recusing yourself? Or
a favorable conflict of interest.
Okay. Okay. So I had a couple of questions based on the tuition revenue and the number of students and the tuition and fee schedule. What's your tuition discount? Just if I were to multiply the 42 students times the stated tuition and fees, it would be a lot different than the $72,000 recognized in tuition.
There is, does that take into consideration your calculation? Because for our calculation, it takes into consideration that there are different tuition, the amount of tuition is different for the programs. So for example, if you're doing the transitional DBT or transitional OTT, that tuition is different. If you're taking one course, a 1-3 credit course, it'll be $1,125. Whereas if you're in the PhD program, it's different, as that's $700 a credit. So if you do one of those courses, the 3 credit course, it's $2,100. So the figures that you're seeing calculate the various tuitions for each program.
Okay. So that's the total for each program?
That's everything together.
Okay.
All right. They pay by course, or real close to it, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And grants, $75,000?
I'm sorry, you said in grants?
In the forecasts for the next 2 years, you project grants of $75,000.
Yes, that's correct. That's because a couple of our individuals are working on some grants that they hold. But of course, we always anticipate that we would receive the actual grant.
Okay. And then, I'm sorry, I can't. I usually have like a color coded post-it, so I would know where to look for this. But I saw something about a clinic in here. Is there any clinical services provided? Maybe that was in some of the revenue.
Yes, the clinical services provided those revenues. The amount of money the clinical service is given to the institution. That's our other revenue.
Okay, so that's the $47,000. Okay, now I see it. So there's $71,000 in tuition contributions, so those are charitable contributions of $90,000, and then the other revenue of $47,377. And so that's clinic revenue. Okay. And hold on, getting there. I assume that there must be clinic expenses associated with that. Are those reflected anywhere here in terms of, you know, things like malpractice insurance or, I'm just trying to see where, you know, because it accounts for, you know, almost two-thirds of your programmatic revenue, and I'm just looking to see where is that reflected in your operating expenses.
Because some of the faculty are also clinicians, so things like what you just mentioned, the malpractice portion of insurance, that is included within the expenses. Because of the clinical nature of it all, as a faculty member that's also practicing, that is included underneath our expenses portion.
So is there, does the university have a physical clinic?
It does have a physical clinic, but it is on its own, so that the one of the things that we like to have are faculty individuals that actually have hands-on experience, so that those experiences translate into the classroom. So the importance of having the clinic there was something that we had within our mission, that let's have this clinic so that there are relative information that's given within the classroom. As you heard mentioned by the previous individual, I'm sorry, I forgot their name, the young man that has the CPT as a wife. Thank you. We always look for that whole evidence-based research, but also evidence-based practice. So by taking that information and putting it in the classroom, that's the reason for the clinic.
So does the university own the clinic?
Yes.
Okay. And so somehow that's reflected in the
Financials that you're seeing?
Yeah.
Yes. Also, the clinic also is part of, as you mentioned, with the labs that we have, the intensive labs. So there's a lab that's there, and because it's not every single day or three times a week, a semester, the lab is just there. So that was transformed and utilizing that space so that we can actually have a clinic. So it serves as two purposes. So the additional expenses from it is really not there per se, because of the fact it is utilized as a lab as well.
So in other words, if I'm looking at the audited financial statements, and I'm looking at page 10 in the notes under lease commitments, and so what you're referring to as the clinic is the same space as the offices and classroom space, and at certain times you utilize the existing space as a clinic.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And then where are you at from a timeline standpoint with HLC?
With the accreditation standpoint, we've already prepared the doctors, but we wanted to make sure, because Dr. Sweeney from HLC, she strongly encouraged us to make sure that we have that extra board member and complete the state approvals before submitting the document. So we're definitely doing that, so that we do not find ourselves having to go back and forward. She said to avoid the back and forth of fixing this and fixing that. It would be easier to just do it at one time. So we are very close to finishing that. We have the November board meeting to confirm that other board person. And the same thing for, it was the state approval for the degree offering. We are also very close to completing that. So we definitely anticipate having our documents sent over to them by January of 2018. And then the letter of intent. Well, the letter can't come first, so we're anticipating doing that December. Hopefully it might happen before then, but just to make sure that there's enough time there, we will, that's why we put December 2017.
Okay. All right. I don't
have it. Dr. Pitts, could I ask what states you have had to go through the licensure process with?
Sure. Do you want me to? I would have to go strictly by memory. Do I?
Oh, I'm just curious. Yeah, just.
Oh, one of them would be one of them is California. Florida. Also another one.
You're picking the hard states.
I know, but we already had a student in the state, so we had to go forward with it.
Have you been granted approval in both those states?
Not as yet.
Not yet. Are the students still currently enrolled?
The Florida student will probably finish shortly, but we seem to get a lot of students from California, so that one we definitely need to keep going.
They had Title IV, then we
were
a real serious problem.
Okay. I don't have any further questions. And unless you do, Mr. Lukey, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the provisional degree license renewal application with the stipulations that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained and that the university continue quarterly reporting.
Okay. I will join you in that entertainment.
Okay, so I'm going to assume that you're moving. I'll second. Dr. Pitts, do you agree to those stipulations?
I do, but I do have a question. May I ask the question?
I don't know. Depends on the question. Go ahead.
The question is that you stated to remain doing quarterly reporting, and I'm just wondering as to the reason as to why we need to stay, because at the last meeting everything was on track and we thought we would at this juncture be able to be presented to the board is to come off. Yes.
I'll just throw out my 2 cents. They have been making the projections and they are positive. As a provisional, they will be before the board every year.
Okay. So you're saying to remove the quarterly reporting?
You could. Because you'll be guaranteed that the board itself will see them every.
So I guess the only question that I have, Dr. Pitts, and for your consideration, Mr. Lukey, is given the HLC process, which would start in December or January, you know, to get to candidacy, that's probably
2 years,
are you thinking, Dr. Pitts, before achieving candidacy status, which means...
Well, yes, and that was one of our things with HLC in our discussion when we created our timeline. They told us it was too aggressive and we had to, if we would reconsider the timeline. So that's why it was changed for us. I know that there was concern from our board regarding being on this quarterly financial reporting. We wanted to be presented to HLC without that on our record, that we were currently going through that.
Okay.
They were originally going through tracks.
Right.
And so that's why they're a little further behind. And
well, given the size of the student body and the fact that the university has been actually in the black, I'm amenable to making a change to remove the quarterly reporting. Mr. Lukey?
Yes, I agree. Fine.
Okay. We'll do that. Dr. Pitts. Now, are you amenable to the motion and the stipulations?
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right. There we go. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Thank you. You too.
See you in October, Dr. Pitts.
Okay, thanks, Terry.
Next up, Arizona Heart Institute School of Cardiac Ultrasound.
Now we're to just the quarterly reports, so it's not the renewals, it's just the review of the quarterly.
This is that.
This is very unusual. I have not heard from Paula.
Hi, I'm here on the phone.
Is
that a good thing that we're going to hear from Paula?
I guess so. It's
just
like
unusual.
She just disappeared and hadn't heard from her. So.
All right, well, we're glad
she's here.
To hear from you, Paula.
Yes, we have some great news.
Yeah, well, before you do, Terry, do you want to cue us up for
No, this is just review of the quarterly reports from
All right,
on.
Well, we're ready for some great news.
All right, well, as of yesterday, we just closed on the building, so it is finally, we are no longer the landlord, and we are moving into our new space on the first floor of the building in about a week. So we're really, really excited about that. We're going to put about $2 million in the bank, and we've got already some new programs starting. We have a couple of extra ultrasound programs beginning in March. And in January, we have a new cardiovascular nurse specialist program starting. So we're pretty happy.
Mazel tov to you.
Have you submitted those program apps?
No, we just made some of these decisions. They're coming your way for sure.
Okay.
But we have the renewal for the cardiac and vascular school, so that'll be coming your way, you know, in October. So these are just extra spin-offs of that, but we'll go through all the proper paperwork.
Just checking.
And here I thought you were going to tell
us.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The nursing program doesn't need a license. It's more of a continuing education program.
What do you mean, the nursing program?
The one that we have started in this coming January is basically a CEU program. It's accredited through the ANCC.
Okay, well, be careful when you say nursing program, because you're not only get my eyes eyebrows, you'll get nursing board's eyebrows risen.
Okay, well, I'll certainly submit everything to you first.
Okay. If it's continuing ed, it would not be under our jurisdiction. If it's a nursing program leading to licensure, that's not under our jurisdiction. That's under the Board of Nursing.
No. Yeah, it is. And this has all been cleared through the state board. It's a CEU program. It's 140 credits. So I think we're okay, but I'll certainly still send you the information.
Okay.
We're not granting a license at all.
Okay, because if it's been okay through the nursing board and it's continuing education, then that is not under our jurisdiction and you don't need to submit it.
Correct. Okay. All right. Thank you.
What? Thanks, paper.
Mr. Lukey, do you have any questions or comments?
Yeah, I just have a couple. Can you bring us up to speed on the sale of the foundation as that's been culminated? And there was some mention in some of the minutes from previous meetings that you're going to be the beneficiary of some trust assets, that half of them would be would have been moved to your school. I think the total amount was $1.4 million and you were going to get half of it. Has that happened as well?
Yeah, Sean, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, hey, Sean Kerrigan, CFO, also on the phone here. Half of the money has been submitted already. It's there in the report in line 16. The first question about the sale of the foundation, I think that's what Paul was talking about earlier. It's actually the sale of the building that was our main asset that culminated yesterday.
Okay. All right. Very good. And just give us a rough idea of how you are projecting your financials to look by year end.
I think it's going to be roughly, you know, our year end actually just ended in June. So I really haven't projected it out because we, you know, we're June year end versus a calendar year end. So yeah, I think it's roughly, we're almost break even in terms of the school operation. We just need to get a couple more students starting in January of next year. And, you know, everything else that's been surrounding our finances as far as the building, the operations of the building, maintenance of the building, all that other stuff is gonna kind of go by the wayside now that we've spoken in primary, and now we're just purely focusing on the school and the other programs at Pelham.
All right, very good. Paul, we'll turn it back to you.
So here when you said good news, I thought that you were going to refer to the research. Is that a research grant or the $890,000 in income? Is that, are you talking about proceeds from the sale of the building?
That's pretty much from the trust.
Yeah, that's what's showing from the trust.
Okay, so it's not I thought you were starting a research study.
Well, I will also tell you, yeah, that we're starting a cardiovascular initiative that's related to cardiovascular disease prevention and diabetes, but that's in the infancy stages right now, and that will just be an educational program that we hope to offer to the community as part of our mission. So. Stay tuned.
Well, okay. Great. I do not believe that we have any motions other than, to say congratulations again. And clearly, Dr. Dietrich's legacy is moving forward in the good work that you guys are doing.
So. Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Okay. Have a nice day.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So the Cummings Graduate Institute for Behavioral Health Studies, we're going to give you a pass on not sharing the delicious lunch that you're eating because we made you stay here all
pretzels.
Okay. So next up, Cummings Graduate Institute for Behavioral Health Studies, and we have Dr. English, Amanda Harrison, and Adam Kainer.
Just quarterly reports. I shouldn't say just.
Go ahead. Can you, do you have any good news?
First of all, I want to provide a little bit of introduction to the new individuals here at the table with me this time. I have Amanda Harrison, who was recently promoted to the Director of Operations. So she is now overseeing all of the company finances. And we've also contracted with now CFO. So this is Adam Kainer, and he is our lead accountant for CGI. This is, you know, definitely a move in the right direction for us, and it's also in line with the recommendations at the last financial committee reporting meeting from you, Dr. Brown, related to Brett Sabatini's role as a board member, further separating that out and moving forward with our operational strategy. So we are excited about those moves. In financial news, we came in quarter two just over $38,000 ahead of where we projected we would be due to the timing of some of our projected expenses that are going to be coming in quarter three, so a little later than we thought that they would come in. And we also have projected our accreditation spend to come out. We had projected it to come out in quarter three, but we submitted for our application for DEAC accreditation in August. And so that application went in on August 15th, and the expenses for that application will come out in quarter three. And we did receive a notification from DEAC of the receipt of our application, and we have our FER ready to go. We've been working really hard with a consultant from DEAC, not from DEAC, but who is deeply involved with DEAC and has really helped us strategically get to a position where we feel very confident that we'll have an expedited time frame as well as a positive response to the application of candidacy. We also have 5 new students that we enrolled for the fall, so that's exciting. We have projected that one has deferred to the spring one semester because she had 3 deaths in the family, one right after the other. It was just awful. And then we have 3 additional students projected to start in the spring, so that's an additional 3 to 4 students starting for us. And we do have a graduating class who will be finishing up their work with us this fall. And so we're excited. It's our first real true cohort for us as an institution, so we're really excited about that upcoming commencement. We also have some really exciting partnerships in the works, and one that is due to be announced here in the next couple of days. The International Foundation for Integrated Care is a partnership that we recently signed an agreement with. We're excited about it because it really gives us access to a broader research and knowledge base, global international knowledge base, that will help us both curriculum-wise as well as brand awareness-wise. So the partnership agreement is to cross-promote and work together on projects as we deem profitable for both parties, and not just financially profitable, but you know, towards our mission as a nonprofit institution of changing the way the world experiences healthcare. So we're really excited about that. The work there we feel is really important. And we also have a couple of additional partnerships in place. We're moving towards our annual conference in March, where we're bringing a lot of exciting thought leaders to the table to present updates in effective models of integrated care. Finally, at the next in quarter 3, we're going to see that we entered into a gift agreement with the Nicholas and Dorothy Cummings Foundation. So we got in writing, based on the recommendations of the Financial Committee, the agreement for the ongoing support for CGI. And then we also received a write-off of the loan that we had with NC Gamma for the initial loan for the startup costs. And that was something that was coming up at previous meetings. You know, when would the payoff be? It was due on demand.
The million...
Right, million for the startup funding. Right, so in quarter 3, you'll see both of those come off of our financial statement. So lots of exciting updates. Thank you.
That's pretty good. So how many years is the pledge for the ongoing support?
They dated it so that they asked us to basically renew once accreditation has had enough time to go through the realistic time frame. So it is dated through December 2018. And at that point, we just have the opportunity to go before the Cummings Foundation Board and present the status of our accreditation and ask for a renewal of funds.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
On all of those accounts. Now, you could have spared me like all of these post-it notes for questions about, when is the payable due? So I don't have to ask you about that, et cetera, et cetera.
That was our goal. We're learning.
Well, that's great. Well, really well done. Mr. Lukey, do you have questions or comments for our guest?
I just have one question. The school is a for-profit entity, but it's going, I just want to make sure I'm getting it.
I believe it's a not-for-profit, a 501c3.
It's been 501c3 since day one.
Okay. Well, I'm good. No questions.
We like that.
Okay.
No action.
Yeah.
See you next quarter. Keep it up.
Okay, just a quick question. In terms of the time frame for coming off financial reporting, would that be something we discuss at our annual visit?
Most likely.
Okay.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
Just curious.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Hopefully
thanks.
Soon.
Yeah.
Accreditation is looking very positive.
No, as you could hear from the gentleman before, $30,000. Not cheap.
Yes, that's what we project to spend on accreditation as well. So.
Yeah.
Well, I
do want to say, I know that you have the dual mission of, you have a school, that is that is young and also an emerging field.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have the sort of the dual mission and challenge of advancing the school, but also kind of convincing the world at large.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're doing that, the work that Dr. Cummings mm-hmm. started
mm-hmm.
Back at ASU way back when is something that has an important place in society.
He's been writing about this for 50 years, so he's
yeah.
well ahead of his time, but the research since Dr. Cummings stopped doing research at 80 years old has certainly borne out everything that he wrote about, so it's exciting to be, as you say, advocating for that in the larger application.
Good work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have to find it now.
My dental is this.
Yeah, where did I put?
Dr. Fulcher, are you still on?
Oh my God. Yeah.
What?
2.5 hours. How are you guys doing?
We miss your smiling face.
All right.
Well, I'm smiling.
Good.
Sure.
Well, I'm smiling too because we're going to break for lunch as soon as we're done with you. So we have Dr. William Fulcher, dentist, on the line. And Dr. Fulcher, do you have any updates to share with us?
Not really. Not since last board meeting. Everything's been pretty much the same.
Thank you, Doug. All right. Mr. Lukey, do you want to start us off, or would you like me to?
Well, Paul, I'm going to let you start because after reading the report, I don't have any questions.
Okay. I just have just a couple observations. Congratulations. It looks like you've got quite a few more. Your student enrollment looks like it's gone significantly higher than even than what you projected, so that's really nice. And then the only question that I have is you also, it looks like, have a significant increase in the dental revenue, correct?
Uh-huh.
And so what I don't see in the and I'm looking at the P&L statement for the first 6 months of 2017, I don't see any of the dentist's expenses like salary for that. And it says
those show up in the balance. They're made in 1099. Those don't show up. Because I am the dentist, so they show up as distributions.
Okay, so let me see where that is. So the distribution is that under retained earnings, or where does that come out?
AAA distribution.
The 25? Okay. Right. I see it. And are you, for some reason, I thought, Dr. Fulcher, that you were, had a, that you were not practicing,
maybe at the beginning. Didn't you have a disability issue that you brought up, and that was kind of part of the reason that you started the school to begin with? So for some reason, I thought it was a must have been a different dentist. Maybe.
No, you're absolutely right. No, you're right. So the plan is for me to phase out of doing the dental side. Correct. I just haven't been able to yet.
So you generated $500,000 of services, even though you're trying to phase out?
Yeah. It's not very sustainable.
So, but I think that I guess, you know, it's interesting because I don't. Okay. I was just trying to understand. From an accounting, you know, I know that you've brought, you know, that you have an independent accountant.
On a personal side,
yeah.
I add back in from my own P&L. So if you're wondering how does the business look, if you were to pay a dentist and I were to step away,
those
calculations are being done.
Okay. All right. You know what? I think Mr. Lukey from I was here. I started on the board right at the same time that Dr. Fulcher started the school. And so I would say that, you know, he's been, you know, kind of started on a shoestring, and it's been getting better and better. Every quarter. So all really I have to say is congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Was that worth spending the last 2.5? Congratulations, Dr. Fulcher. Now, doesn't that sound like your time was well spent here? For spending an entire day with us? Not really. Very well done. And any other...
Yes, we need to just get a formal acceptance from you on the audio recording. From
so
March
moved.
23rd is the official minutes. Okay.
So moved.
Okay, well, wait a minute. We can't do it because Mr. Luke, you would not. Okay, good enough. Never mind. We're good.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Dr. Fulcher, have a great day. Thank you very much. I think we've completed the agenda, and so Mr. Lukey, unless you have any other new business that you want to bring up, looking around the room, everybody's hungry here. I think we are ready to adjourn.
Just make sure to count. December 12th is our next meeting.
Finance. Okay, and we have an upcoming board meeting.
October.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Hold on one sec before you go.
No.
Adjourn.